SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Friday, race fans, and I'm here to tell you, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports on 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at the website too, stevebick.com. I'm here to tell you that I'm gonna praise the racing venues everywhere here for a minute. It's October. You know, you've got, obviously, with Breeders' Cup, you've got a big focus 2 weeks away from today. And then there's everything else that goes on. But if you have not had a chance, and there may be just certain venues that you peruse on a regular basis and don't take a wider look, whenever there's a stake, more or less, especially when there's multiple stakes, I'll go look at whatever venue. And yesterday, of course, we talked to Joe Clancy about Maryland Million, and it's out of this world. They've got a big day of racing tomorrow. But that's just one of, a bunch of eye-popping cards. And Keeneland and Belmont, I told you yesterday that the Wednesday card that they drew for Saturday, 11 horses per race. You look at, obviously, Keeneland has got a terrific set of races, but Hawthorne, we talked last week to Marcus, and they pushed back because of the weather. They pushed back that Hawthorne Derby. They got 7 for the Hawthorne Derby, $100,000, and it looks like a pretty well-matched field. But there's also the Illini Princess, which is 11 horses, and then 10, 8, 12, 9, 8, 9, 9, another 12 in the nightcap, another weekend of nice racing. And big full fields at Hawthorne. Everywhere I looked last night and this morning, there happens to be those rescheduled races. And, of course, Delta had to cancel the last weekend. And so, the racing office benefits from that. However, because the lights are down, so it's this afternoon, I should say, they've got a card, a 10-race card, 8 by 9 by 10 by 10 by 10 by 10 by 8 with an entry by 10 by 10 by 10, including the Louisiana Jewel, 7 furlongs for the 2-year-old fillies, where it looks like Free Like a Girl, Pedro Cotto, aboard. Looks like your favorite, is that right? 5-2. I was kind of looking for it's La Brett's. This is Chasey Pommier, and just off of a Evangeline stake win. So this is just everywhere, almost everywhere you look was like this, and I kept printing out. Actually, printed out probably more than I should have. I've got just tons of. Of stakes that I want to have at least handy and, keep an eye on. So I was really impressed. We've got a really nice weekend of racing, just without, a ton of fanfare. The two stakes in New York, there's one today, too, the Carl Place, the Turf Sprint, and then into tomorrow we'll talk to Dave Grenig in Hour 3. Dave will also go over his Breeders' Cup categories for divisions for the Daily Racing Form. He's doing the juvenile, as always, and the filly and mare turf. So we'll get that from him. On that front, on the DRF front, we'll talk to Marty McGee. And Marty, you'll see, we'll see if there's been any changes. We'll talk to Marty after an early visit from Hammer. I just tweeted about that. In fact, Case, you almost could even reach for Hammer because he's gone I think his flight is at 7 a.m. Pacific. So we'll get Hammer in here. He's on his way to Kansas City. And as I tweeted, and for those of you who didn't see Twitter, get your pencils ready because I've got, Hammer said, you know, I said, have you ever been? No, he'd never been. So he wanted some barbecue joints. However, and it is the greatest barbecue town. I'm sure the Texans will spit and holler, and you know, Carolinians, they've got their thing to hang their hat on the vinegar side. But from top to bottom, from east to west, Kansas City can't be beat for. Not just barbecue, but for ribs, and it's unbelievable. Just the best. However, in addition, I don't want Hammer to go there for 3 days and have nothing but barbecue, because there's three other areas where Kansas City excels. The pork tenderloin sandwich of Kansas City. For those of you that live anywhere from, I don't know, I guess Illinois to Kansas, you know what I'm going to talk about here. It's a pork tender that is pounded wafer thin and then dusted and fried, and then it's folded like four times and stacked on a sandwich. It's incredible, and there's very few other parts of the country where you can find that pork tender sandwich. And then there's the burgers. It's a tremendous burger town. And we're sending Hammer to one of the all-time greats, and there's actually several all-time greats. And then there's the fried chicken story, the pan-fried chicken. And most of you that know Kansas City, yeah, we'll recommend Stroud's, but I've got a sleeper for Hammer, too. And I think Hammer's in the background.
I am in the background. I just cleared security, and here at the best airport in the world, Burbank, because there's nobody here.
I've gone once.
A surprise trip to Kansas City last minute, literally last minute. Someone said, hey, you want to go to the NASCAR race in Kansas City? I said, you asked the right guy. Let's go. So I knew there was only one person to ask where to eat, and that's you. So lay it on me, baby.
All right. This is very hard. And you'll be there how long? You'll be there through Sunday?
What's today? Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, coming home Monday.
Ooh, okay. So you do get some extra time. All right. From on the barbecue front, it's not hard. There's long-standing classics, and of course, no conversation about barbecue. Any actually, not just in Kansas City, but in the country, there probably isn't a more important barbecue joint in the country than Arthur Bryant's and on Brooklyn Avenue. So Arthur Bryant's. Unique and not for everybody. It's a little different. It's kind of a drier version, but it's great and it's unique. From the conventional side of things, Haywood's has always been a favorite of mine in Shawnee, Haywood's Pit, and you know down in this sort of in the southern suburbs. Over the Kansas border, Overland Park, and you know down that way, Shawnee, Gates Barbecue, which has got a lot of locations these days. I think they did when I called on them. I always liked Gates. One of my favorite places is gone from down in Martin City, Keegan's Townhouse. They're gone, but. Those three are the famous classics, and there's a fairly that I don't know how new it is. I think it was probably in the 90s. Joe's, which opened in like a gas station, husband and wife. And Joe's is absolutely award winning and terrific, and that's convenient because that's near Westport, near the plaza, sort of in mid-central, midtown. Joe's.
Well, you know, Joe's, I've asked three other people, and Joe's was the only other name that was similar. So, I mean, they're both mentioned. So, like you said, that might be a little bit newer, but we're definitely there to eat barbecue. So we'll check a couple of those places out for sure.
All right.
And, you know, long time been to Kansas City, but why not?
But wait. There's more. There's more. There's way more. You're going to sell yourself short if you get to Kansas City. There's three other things that demand consideration. The pork tenderloin sandwiches, and for that I would go to Kitty's. Kitty's Cafe, been around probably 75 years. Kitty's also, it was very close to where I lived. I lived in the Belle Reve on East Armor Boulevard, and Kitty's was just west. So Kitty's out of this world for the pork tender. Fried chicken, Hammer, the pan-fried chicken is legendary in Kansas City and centers around Stroud's. Stroud's is goes back, I think, to the 20s or 30s and is one of the most famous fried chicken joints in the country. However, I'll give you a absolute sleeper. When I had my antique car that I bought in St. Joseph, I would have it serviced at Troostwood Garage. And on Troost, there still is, Niecy's, which is a soul food restaurant that is unbelievable. And Niecy's fried chicken is spectacular as well. So Niecy's and Stroud's. And Kitty's for the pork tender. And then there's one other topic, and that is the burgers. And you do have to go to Winstead's. The one off the plaza would be ideal. And you're going to get probably a double burger with rings and with a limeade. You got to have a limeade. Winstead's. And if you guys happen to be kind of up late and it gets to be past midnight and you're hungry, there is it was a small chain at one time, and I called on them. They were already kind of closing. I think there's still two or three, called Town Topic, which was basically like a White Castle or a White Tower joint. Little burgers. Town Topic. That's also around Midtown, and everybody, when the clubs are winding down, everybody goes to Town Topic.
No, you mentioned White Castle, so I'm very familiar with that.
There you go. It's really good, and I know there's the oldest location, which, I mean, if you looked at it, you'd say we're not going in here, but there'll be a lineup out the door.
Well, you know what? This is great. And it's funny because we actually have 1 month from today. I'll be either very close or in Hot Springs and getting ready to start the Oakland meet, and so that's why the time's getting short. So I'll be taking a few quick trips here.
There you go.
Before I go, and one of the next ones will be, we'll see each other at the Breeders' Cup pretty much like next week, right?
Leave next Saturday. Yep.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. And, hey, you know what? Kansas City, here we come. So
nice. You'll enjoy it. It's a fabulous. And you're going to have to go through the plaza and see that. And Westport's cool. And I would send you across to Kansas City, Kansas, to a burger place called Fritz's, which is the funniest thing. You order, and then a train goes around the rim of the building, and a little sign thing drops, and the box of your burger and fries, it lands on a tray, and then it gets lowered to your table. It's the funniest thing ever.
Not Frisch's Big Boy.
No, that's Frisch's. No, this is Fritz, F-R-I-T-Z, in Kansas City, Kansas.
The racetrack's in Kansas City, Kansas, so right,
yeah,
across.
Right across.
So maybe we'll be there.
Well, there you go. I can't get better. I haven't been to Kansas City in the last, let's see, it's 2021. I probably haven't been in 6 or 7 years, frankly. But these are institutions that I gave you.
Well, guess what? We're going to hit a few of them. There's no doubt about it.
So nice.
I knew there was only one person to ask about Kansas City, and you were ready. So appreciate it. Have a good another study weekend, basically, and getting ready. Watch a lot of film, and we'll be ready to talk turkey next week for sure.
Excellent. Listen, have a safe trip. Have fun. Send some pictures. I don't think that. How old is that track?
I don't think it's that old, not that familiar. I think, well, I think it was a, kind of like a bush track for a while, and then they built it up. I don't think it's been running regular NASCAR races for maybe 25 years, something like that.
Wow.
Kansas Speedway, so we'll check it out. Just another check on the box.
I love it. I love it. Have fun, Hammer.
Thanks, Dave. Enjoy the weekend.
We'll talk to Rick next Friday when I'll be the next day. I'll be on my way to Del Mar, and there it goes. And how fun. I've got that same, you know, the same mentality. Tina and I, we'll jump in the car for whatever. And sometimes we jump in the car and we don't even have a plan. We just get in the car and we end up somewhere. That's how we got to Watkins Glen, speaking of racetracks. We ended up in, for our anniversary last year. And it got to be September, and we hadn't really, you know, plus things were still a little out of whack. So we, we didn't know what to do. And we just got in the car. We started driving west. We thought maybe we'd go to Thousand Islands. And then I said, you know what? Let's go down Seneca Lake. And the next thing I know, we spent the weekend in Watkins Glen, and which I had never been to. As much as I traveled New York State over the years, I'd never ever driven through Watkins Glen. So it was very cool. And you got I want to call it a fjord, but it's not a fjord. That's in Scandinavia. The chasm. There's like a, it's amazing if you go, if you have a chance. Watkins Glen. I think I got Marty McGee in the background.
Hey.
Mark. Marty.
You got Hammer with you?
He just left. He's airport waiting. He's at Burbank getting ready to fly to KC.
You know, he and I used to play basketball together, 92, 93. I remember we played in the high school in Hot Springs when he, for some reason, he was there. He wasn't working there then. Might have been 94-ish. But, yeah, we'd always try and find an available court when we had knees and youth on our side.
Well. Well, it's Santa Anita had the most famous, right? The Southern California circuit's got the famous basketball background with Gary Young and John White and all those guys. There was a big deal. Kurt Hoover, right? Kurt Hoover's a major basketball
star. I remember
star.
Playing in some game in Laurel. It had to be the late 80s. It was the Jocks versus the Trainers, and they let us press guys throw in. I forget. I think I was on the Trainers team, but
well, not as is it as was it as great as the Pimlico infield softball league?
No, that was epic. Chick Lang recruited me my first year there, which was 85. He used to stack his team, and we had ringers, and you weren't supposed to have ringers, but I remember I finally, when I purged my basement 2 or 3 years ago, finally threw away the 3 trophies I had from when we won those leagues back then. Yeah.
You threw them out? That's
threw
awful.
Them away. I mean,
no
come
good.
On, Vic.
I can't believe it. I'm disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, they lived in the basement. I mean, what was I going to do? Put them on my mantle next to my, you know. Yeah.
I've got a story. It's funny. I have a story that I've been harboring for something. I don't know what. I don't know how to merchandise it. It might just simply be a magazine story, and maybe I'll hand it over to somebody that I call the Great Little League Caper. That Davey Jacobson told me a story from apparently the late 70s or early 80s up here at Saratoga. And the racetrack put together a little league team and essentially challenged this championship club from Albany or from Clifton Park or somewhere. And the betting on this was apparently legendary. And it ended up being like this, you know, like literally, they could make a movie of this, the Great Little League Caper. If Pat Kelly is listening, he's I'm sure he's laughing. It involves Neil Hellman and Bill Stone. And Davey told me this. I'd never heard the story before. The Great Little League Caper. The racetrack. Nothing like it. One thing I got to slip in, Marty, and I don't know, I imagine you had some dealings when you were working for the Sun with Mario Pino, and Mario closed out the career. For those of you that didn't hear his visit from yesterday on the replay this morning, 7:30, it's up at the website. We had so much fun with Mario, and he added one more win, came close a couple other times, ends up with 7,001 wins as he hangs up the tack.
I don't know anybody who disliked Mario. He started in 79, so he was a veteran by the time I got to Maryland in 85. Of course, I had many, many dealings with him and his wife, Christina, and they have three daughters. And he's just really lived an exemplary life and tremendous career. And Byron King, my former colleague with the Forum, wrote a terrific story about him yesterday.
Yeah.
It was, detailed the end and everything. And I don't know if anybody for us did it, because that's kind of a hole in our Presque Isle Downs. We don't really cover that much. But anyway, Mario, it's like he said himself, it all worked out after, 42 years? And he went out on top, and I think a lot of people in this industry are happy for him.
No doubt. And, you know, there's a very vocal group. It's very similar to the King Leatherberry Hall of Fame group that are advocating for Pino to get Hall consideration, at least to make the ballot. And I'm sure there'll be some off-season noise about that.
Well, I don't know if he... You know, even at Maryland, he didn't really dominate the way, you know, say in the late 80s, DeSormo did. And before that, it was kind of Donnie Miller. And, you know, it wasn't soon thereafter that Ramon came around, or Prado and then Ramon.
Yeah.
And so Mario was always like number three or four or whatever in the standings. But you know, he had a lot of clients, a lot of trainers who liked working with him. He communicated so well and, you know, was so even keeled. You know, he was really a benefit to many of the horsemen there in Maryland and beyond.
Now, I had our first opportunity, and I've had his brother Michael on, but I'd never had Mario, and we really had fun yesterday. And Tony Black sat in too for about half of it, so they were in the room together for quite a bit. So
I would. You talk about an underrated trainer, Mike Pino. What a fun guy he is too. I saw he won a race the other day, just a couple days ago. But he had a horse named Ten Keys when I first came around. I think he won either a race here at Keeneland, or it might have been at Churchill when they were first starting what was the predecessor to the Woodford, the Early Times maybe.
Early Times, look at you.
Yeah, when the turf courses here in Kentucky, Keeneland and Churchill, I think they started in 86 and 87. And one of those years, Ten Keys came from Maryland to win. And that has remained one of the bright spots in Mike Pino's career.
I appreciate the added perspective. And, of course, it's Maryland Million Weekend. And you were there for the formative stages of Maryland Million.
Yeah, I remember there was one race. Chris McCarron came in. This was at the height of his powers. This had to be about 80s. It might have been the first one, but Chris rode a horse for Leatherberry, and he drew up alongside DeSormo. Of course, DeSormo was the hot shot. He was only 19 or something then. And Chris pulled his whip out. I said, "It's over." And Chris went ahead and won it. You know, that was the veteran versus the rookie, but... Jim McKay was around a lot those days. He and Dale Austin, my mentor and former colleague with the Sun, had a lot of dealings. And those were some really special times when, you know, there have been so many states that have copied that concept.
Yep.
And Jim McKay was at the forefront of it. And it's, you know, continued to this day, and it's just terrific.
Well, and the story goes he was flying back from Hollywood from the 84 from the first Breeders' Cup and had the epiphany. Why couldn't we do this with the State Breds or, in the case of the Maryland Million, with Sired, with the Sire series? And yeah. Unbelievable. Absolute brilliant stroke. You mentioned some of the colleagues. Clem Florio, right? Florio was in those press boxes?
I was talking about Clem yesterday. Because my daughter Kelly's in town, and we were talking about she has a friend in Pittsburgh, and my girlfriend Alicia likes saying this when you're really kind of down and in the dumps. And I stole this from Clem. He'd say, "I'm in Pittsburgh, and it's raining."
It's funny.
Yeah, the greaser. He's been gone about 10 years now, but yep. He called himself the grease.
We go down these crazy roads. This is like a country road drive on these shows. Marty, let's dive in. Before we talk Keeneland, give us any updates that you think are important to your Breeders' Cup divisions, the Filly and Mare Sprint. You said last week that it was going to end up being kind of a scant group of challengers to Gamin, and we're kind of losing candidates by the day. The Raven Run, I thought, took a couple of candidates away from the Filly and Mare Sprint.
Yeah, Obligatory. She's a 3-1 favorite in the Raven Run, and I reached out to Roddy Mott maybe a week or so ago, and they said nah. And the Wheelback, obviously, when Shamrock Rose did it 3 years ago from here to Churchill, in an improbable upset in the Filly and Mare Sprint, that's because of the proximity of the track. I would not see anything coming out of this race to run in the Filly and Mare Sprint. What we've got right now is, I think I've only got about six. Bell's the one work this morning, and I'm going to assume that if it went okay, that Neil will go ahead and run her. Also, Billy Koch of Little Red Feather, they're one of five owners in Estilo Talentoso. He said that they are going to go ahead and supplement. It's going to cost them a total of $130,000, which to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense, for just $1 million purse. But nonetheless, that makes her eligible in future years, too. So she's going to run. But I had, who did I have dropped out? Michael McCarthy told me that his other horse, not Cece, but Stellar something, she is very doubtful. Had a couple others drop out. So I think right now we have Stellar Sound. On Deck, who was the runner-up in the Chillingworth, Jonathan Wong told me, looks like they probably will run. So I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, you don't see many Breeders' Cup races with 7. My other race is the Juvenile Fillies on Friday. We had a couple of key workers toward that, both of them early this morning at Churchill. Juju's Map and Hidden Connection both worked. They will both work one more time before they leave. The big FedEx plane leaves out of Indianapolis on that Monday, November 1st. And I don't know how many horses they're taking. I'm going to say at least 20 from around here. But all the Cox horses and others are going to be on that flight.
Who else seems now more certain to participate? I haven't heard an update.
I've not heard Juvenile Fillies.
Yeah, is Cherie, how much closer is Cherie DeVoe to a decision with Tarabi after missing a little bit of time with a little infection? She thought that maybe she, you know, if she was doing great, she would bring the first Samurai Filly.
Yeah, I need to catch up with her this morning. I drove up from Churchill, from Louisville this morning. Tarabi, she did work yesterday. I think that was her fourth work back. Cherie told me that Filly had some scrapes that just wouldn't heal right, and that's why she had to miss that final round of preps, either the Frizette or Alcibiades or whatever she would have run in. So I've got right now, Steve, I got 9 for that. Echo Zulu, of course, the favorite over Juju's Map, Hidden Connection, and Ain't Easy. Electric Ride for Sadler, she's in. Bob Baffert, he texted me back on Monday. This is Friday. He texted me back that Grace Adler, who of course was terribly disappointing in the Chandelier after romping in the debutante, he said he was still on the fence with her. Desert Dawn, I'm assuming D'Amato was thinking about her. She'd be a long shot. And Dallas Stewart does want to run the third-place finisher in the Alcibiades. Sequist, we've got her as one of the outsiders, too. So that's a total of nine right there.
Baffert had that other filly, too, Ida, the money filly.
He did not. What I got from his text is that she is not going to run.
Interesting. I
didn't canvass the entire world on this. You might have a maiden breaker come in, but both the Chads, three of the Todds, they all gave me a ixnay on that.
Wow. Well, you are going to have, Hidden Connection and Echo Zulu and Juju's Map. I saw Kevin Kirstein. In fact, I should retweet that. Kevin Kirstein sent out a video, a nice video of her, and she I thought, finished beautifully past the wire. So, all right. And we'll keep in tabs as we go forward. And we'll talk to Steve Anderson next and get Steve's first look at his divisions. And, Marty, let's turn into some Keeneland action. And we've got another nice weekend. The Perryville tomorrow, the Raven Run, which you sort of hinted at. We got the Sycamore today and the Dowager on Sunday.
As my boss, Jody Swaby, called it, the Dew Wager on Sunday. Yeah.
That's great.
That's the filly and mare counterpart to the Sycamore, which is today. A lot of very competitive racing, actually all of them, all four of them. And then, next week, Steve, we end with five stakes. It normally has been just like the Fayette left by itself at the very end. But I think Gatewood Bell, the new GM here, he said that they kind of made a conscious effort to string them out a little bit more. Plus, they have more money to work with. So instead of having like 17 or 18 stakes, which they traditionally had had here at Keeneland, they now have 22. So we got five on next Friday, which there'd be two of them next Friday and three of them on closing day. So there's a little more stakes action that the balance out the meet a little bit. But you wanted to look at, the Sycamore today. Oh, yeah. This is really intriguing, and I wrote about it at length in the this week in the forum. Two Emmys makes his first start in the since he won the Mr. D, nay Arlington Million, and he drew the outside post in the three turn Sycamore with Jimmy Graham up. I talked to Jimmy about this horse. He loves him. Why wouldn't he? Because he's ridden him three times, two wins and a second to Colonel Liam in the Muniz at 24-1 over the winter. So the thing about this race, Steve, he really and truly looks like the Lone Speed. There might be a couple of horses to give him token pressure, those being Rise the Guy or Yamato. They're both kind of longer prices. So if Jimmy can get this two Emmys into a smooth rhythm, he ought to be able to control the race. So this is one of those interchangeable Robertson horses where Hugh, who is a co-owner, Hugh had him for the Arlington race, but now since Mac is here at Keeneland, he has assumed his training maybe a month or so ago. And he's very much the one to catch and beat today in the Sycamore.
I will mention, it'll be interesting to see what Rafael Bejarano does on Kentucky Ghost, who has been very good this summer and into the fall without winning. And I 8-1, and I Kentucky Ghost is going to make the way onto my tickets. And I suppose you got to respect Glynn County down inside, and the way Gaffleone is riding, Marty, you got to look extra at every call he takes.
Yeah, I mean, he's my top pick. He has also run three straight 97 buyers, which match up very favorably with the favorite here. Actually, I'm looking at my Hermes picks, and I don't have two Emmys anywhere. I guess I don't know what I'm thinking. Maybe he'll need the race. Maybe, sometimes the Lone Speed it doesn't hold up. And Maker has been just wicked in these kind of races, the last 8-10 years now. So I give Glynn County a huge chance, as do you. If Tyler can save ground on all three turns, I think he might loom large once they straighten for home.
Yeah, interestingly, Maker got off, we've been talking about this at Derby Trail, actually, it came up. Maker got off to a little bit of a slow start this fall after the big Saratoga, and now has come on, and has won, I want to say, maybe four races in the last maybe three race cards, race days, as it happens. So,
yeah, I know. He won a couple back-to-back here on Wednesday, and one of them was a horse he claimed for my brother, Hope and Dignity. And who was the victim of a brutal disqualification this summer at Ellis Park. One of those touch fouls where they go ahead and take him down. But anyway, water under the bridge. But, yeah, Mike, after, you know, when you win like he did at Saratoga, and this is really common, you waste a lot of conditions, and you're stepping up with so many of them into the next condition, and it's only natural that you slump a little bit. Seems like some of these guys somehow avoid it. But, yeah, that's probably what happened with Mike. He didn't have the kind of stellar Kentucky Downs meet he normally does. But, as you said, he's getting back. And then I expect he'll do well, you know, the rest of this meet at Keeneland and at Churchill Downs.
Let's look at Saturday together, Mart, and the Perryville. This is always a good time for three-year-olds that had aspirations in the first half of the year and classic trail types. And lo and behold, Soup and Sandwich for Mrs. Weber and Mark Cassie turns up, and he can get back to the good races off the bench. He's competitive, obviously, but there's a few serious considerations here.
Yeah, I thought this was really an interesting race. I actually picked Tommy Drury on the outside with Runway Magic, who was terrific in that 1 mile allowance win at Churchill. Gets the open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear. Talked to Mark Cassie about Soup and Sandwich. He said as soon as the Derby was over, he said, let's regroup. In that time, he came back with some real nice work at in Ocala. Since then, he's been turned over to David Carroll, and Mark spoke glowingly about this horse. Now, I don't like that rail spot coming back. I don't have it picked anywhere. Might need it, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, this horse did very little wrong prior to the Kentucky Derby. But, you know, I'm going to wait for him a little bit later, maybe when we get down to Florida.
Fair enough. We look beyond to, let's jump to the Raven Run, and then we'll maybe touch on a couple of the allowance races dotting the card, including the three races tomorrow that are the Turf Pick 3 that has caught a nice wave and has been well received. Tomorrow, the 5th, 8th, and 10th are your Turf Pick 3, $3 Turf Pick 3, all allowances. But the Raven Run, and we'd hinted about it, obligatory. And since we're talking Cassie and Mrs. Weber, it seems like the principal competition comes from Super Sensational here.
You would think. I mean, she's been pretty steady. I don't, you know, she's had a pretty long year, as I think Marcus Hirsch pointed out in his story for the Saturday editions of the Forum. I went to kind of a stranger in here with Chad, with Zaina Larab. She's a war front sprinting. And as we all know, he's become renowned for turf miler types. And as Chad pointed out to me slyly, that Warfront himself, you may or may not remember this, Steve, he had a 13-race career. They were all on the dirt, mostly at a mile or less. Mm-hmm. And then I just think that off those two wins in New York, that she might be a little sneaky in here. Obviously, the Mott pair and the Cassie pair both merit high respect. But this, you know, like I said earlier, these stakes this weekend are really competitive.
Well, and the other, and when you say the pair, I'll remind people, because I mentioned it yesterday just looking at the overnight, but Miss Speedy, which was a private purchase, a Super Speedy Ontario bred filly, bred by Linda Mason. I'm Linda Mason. Extra points, Mart, if you know where that's from.
Don't. You're not.
A great nightclub scene in Holiday Inn. Early in Holiday Inn. I'm Linda Mason. And Bing Crosby rolls his eyes. Who the hell's Linda Mason? whenever I see Linda Mason's name, it always makes me laugh. But Miss Speedy She had that first start for Cassie, stretched out, and then the second try in the Bison City, she kind of stubbed her toe. And so Mark cut her back, and it does look like she wants to stay short. So Miss Speedy in here, 6-1.
Yeah, she's the outside speed, which I always like in these one-turn races. So, and Mark really talked her up to me.
Interesting.
And compared her to Shamrock Rose, if you remember, before Shamrock Rose won the Raven Runner, like 18-1. She was coming off a big victory on the Woodbine Poly, so or Tepeda. So you are hereby forewarned on her.
Well, you're all over the place because you also, I'm just looking, I just pulled up your tabs, and you're interested in the 6-1, the Chad. Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. I mean, but I didn't know you picked her, Zane Larab.
Yes, that's who I got.
Yeah, all right. Nice. It's a good group. I didn't know there was one horse that has got some performances that fit, but she's going to get a class test. That's the La Bred of Brett Brinkman's Scylla, California Chrome Filly. She's okay, that filly.
Yeah, I called Charlie Baker to talk about her, but that was a one off where
he just Brett saddled Brinkman her.
Yeah, he didn't want to. He didn't want to pay the workers' comp or whatever.
I don't blame him.
So now she is back in the care of Brett Brinkman. I see in the Keeneland notes they quoted him talking about her. But, you know, she was 10-1 when beating an odds-on super sensational. I'm somewhat skeptical in that there's going to be a lot of speed on both sides of her. So, I'm going to fade Scylla.
Just looking at your 5th, 8th, and 10th, I'll give everybody the top your top picks, and you can comment as you'd like. This is the $3 pick 3 in the 5th, War Machine for you, Mart, and then Hierarchy in the 8th, and Ginsburned in the 10th.
Hierarchy scratches out of the, I assume he scratches today. He's number 3 today in the Sycamore to go in that lighter spot. And then who did I pick in the 10th?
In the 10th, you liked Ginsburn, 5-1 for George Arnold II.
He's always sneaky. I mean, that
yes, he is.
You know, that's got to be the weakest grade one in North America is what that Bruce D has become. Or it was the Secretariat when they made it a mile. But anyway, that's under the bridge over the dam. Dick. So, Rusty's always dangerous.
Well, how about the way I needed Thing to finish better on Wednesday. But how about the way Morticia's little brother finished a second at boxcar number the other day?
I'm trying to think who you're talking about.
That was Rusty on Wednesday, ran a huge race behind Hope and Dignity.
Oh yeah. Oh, that was. I'm surprised that Super didn't pay more. It was only like $3,700 for a dime. It must have been the Wednesday, the smaller pools on a Wednesday.
Yeah,
and they had one yesterday. I needed Talamo to win when there were 3 boxcar horses, first, second, and third, and Talamo was there for Maker, our first-timer. And Ingrid Mason got nailed on the wire by Wayne Mackey, who and Marcus Hirsch put up on Twitter.
I saw that.
Mackey did 2 for $96, and that was a race in which the Wilkes first-timer, and Marcus said, it doesn't matter how fast the Wilkes first-timers are working. It doesn't matter. Just try and avoid them if you can.
I saw that. It made me laugh. I'm happy for Wayne Mackey and Peter Blum sends him horses. So that was there was really no, from a figure standpoint, there was nothing that kind of stood out yesterday on yesterday's card. But today, tomorrow, Sunday, the as you said, the Go Wager. That's great. The Dowager on Sunday goes as the 7th, the Grade 3. Nice. The size field in here too.
I think Jody, my boss, says that, you know, because of DRS bets, do wager on these breaks.
There you go.
All right, Vic, we'll see you.
Mart, this was great. I appreciate it. Marty McGee, everybody, DRF McGee, as we start to turn our attention toward Breeders' Cup. Although Mart is not, what did Marty said? Marty's not coming out west actually on this go round. Which is too bad. We'll stay here and we'll stay on the DRF beat because Steve Anderson is going to join us, and I've been He probably feels like I've been harassing him or stalking him because I did want to get Steve in here, get his Breeders' Cup divisions, and you know, there's so much that he follows. He follows the quarters. He follows international. I know he was glued to the feed from Far Hills on Saturday. So looking forward to some Steve Anderson conversation. And in fact, I even, when I tell you that I was noticing all kinds of far-flung racing, I have no idea what urged me to click on Albuquerque. I should mention Golden Gate starts today, comes back. But I happened to look, I see Albuquerque, and sometimes you know they've got nice $100,000 stakes on the flat, and I pull the thing up, and they've got this huge quarter horse card tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock, including and highlighted by the Bank of America Challenge Championship for $250,000. Plus, there's another four stakes from $100,000 to $150,000. There's Steve Anderson. Good morning.
Hi.
You couldn't have expected. You couldn't have expected I was going to throw Albuquerque at you.
No, I couldn't. But I can tell you that it's the Challenge Championship Day evening, and it's a series that has been going since 1993. It travels around the country. It's very similar to the Breeders' Cup. There was actually a preceding series in quarter horse racing that was launched in the mid '80s, and this one sort of circumvented that one as the leading quarter horse program. Now, it's a little different. It doesn't have the same widespread participation that the Breeders' Cup does in regards to being a goal for you know, a large number of top horses. This is a series in which you have to qualify around the country and then go forward if you win or finish in the first three of a lot of races. So you'll see a little different structure in that in terms of its participation level. But it has drawn a very, very strong card. And Danger, Valiant Tiberius are very good older horses, and that is highly likely to be the exact in some order. So we'll see what takes place there. That's the that race goes off at 9:45 Eastern, 7:45 Mountain, and it's worth $250,000. So that's a pretty good prize. It was worth a little bit more previously, but there's a Derby with a very good group. Jet Wings One is in that. Very nice horse. Also earlier in the program, a two-year-old race at 350 yards. Yes, worth about $130,000. It hasn't drawn as good of a field as many of the other fraternities around the country. The Distaff race has done well. It's a $100,000 race. Linder 16 is in there. And also a very nice 870 horse called Madewell is in a $100,000 race. That's the richest 870 race in the country. And some other races on the program, too. This is a special program after the conclusion of the main Downs at Albuquerque meeting. So definitely a top-class quarter horse program all across the board in regards to depth of fields and you know, the quality of the program as well. So good field sizes.
I caught my eye, and part of a weekend around the country that has got mostly big full fields, and we certainly were hoping for some big full fields when we get to Del Mar. Steve, let's talk your Breeders' Cup divisions before we do anything else, and the turf, always your bailiwick, and the Juvenile Fillies turf. What's news?
Well, the news was yesterday with John Gosden's stable out of Newmarket, England, that Mishra will pass the race and be pointed towards the 2022 campaign. That's the plan as of now. Mishra was only fourth in the Champion Stakes on good to soft turf at Ascot last Saturday. And on Monday, Gosden mentioned, yeah, we're still considering the Breeders' Cup. Well, on Thursday, 3 days later, they had changed their mind and decided that they were going to pass on the Breeders' Cup this year. Which is a shame. He already earned a fees-paid berth from earlier in the season with the win in the Judmont International at York. So he was a top-class horse in the European season. And, of course, earlier in the year, he won the Saudi Cup on dirt in February, and he won the Shima Classic, a $5 million race against two very good Japanese horses. at Maidan on the Dubai World Cup program. So across the board through the season, even if he only ran six times, he won big races in England and the Middle East. And that's a shame that he's not coming over. It throws open things a little bit in the sense that now Tarnawa is the leading European runner and some of the American horses, and there really hasn't been a single American mile-and-a-half turf horse, mile-and-a-quarter turf horse that's been the dominant runner this year. So there's lots of opportunities now, more opportunities now, rather, for a U.S.-based horse to run well. And we still have to wait and see on with the pre-entries due on Monday and announced this forthcoming Wednesday as to what Aidan O'Brien plans to bring over. He has an excellent record in the race, but he also has a tendency, not only in the Breeders' Cup turf, but in several Breeders' Cup races, to pull a surprise entrant or not have an entrant in some cases, and, you know, what are their goals? Sometimes they make their minds up closer to pre-entry day than what's being expected. And so in that regard, that barn is always prominent, and we'll see in a few days' time what his representatives look like.
Well, and coming out of the weekend, and now with Mishrif crossed off, the last look that I had, Tarnawa, of course, coming out of the arc, and she ran very well. Domestic Spending for Chad as well. Tribuven for Chad, Imperiador, Paulo Lobo, Astronaut still on target as far as we know.
Yes, he is. He's very feisty, and he's trained by John Sheriff, so he's got a little bit of a home court advantage, having won the Del Mar Handicap on August 21st, I believe, at 1 3/8. And, you know, he was a maiden 6 months ago, so he's really come along quickly, 6 or 7 months ago. So he's really come along quickly to become a graded stakes winner. Then the Chad Brown horse, I think, that really merits a lot of consideration in everyone's mind, is Rock Emperor, who won the Joe Hirsch very well at Belmont Park earlier this month. I think he's one that's looked upon as a top contender, too. So, and those are some of the domestic horses. Now, Tarnawa being second in the Arc de Triomphe, it's difficult to criticize that race. First of all, it rained like crazy the night before, and the ground was very soft or heavy, depending on the description that you read. And adding to that was she really didn't have the best trip in between horses towards the inside all the way. Did have the lead in the stretch. It just seemed like she was struggling on the ground. Well, there's rain coming to California at the beginning of this new week, but it won't affect the Breeders' Cup going. It'll be firm at Del Mar on November 6th and November 5th, too. So yeah, there's a little bit of wet weather coming, but it's just seasonal. It's nothing that's going to be significant. If the Breeders' Cup were in Sacramento, it might be a different story.
Well, luckily we're not running there. Chris Clement was with us at the beginning of the week, and we were celebrating his win in Canada. Gaffoe seems targeted as well. What's Love's status? You mentioned O'Brien. I mean, she dances every dance.
He's considering Love and Broom for the race as of last week, and let's see what the pre-entries are like. And as for Christophe Clement, I tell you what, I'm really looking forward to watching his filly Pizza Bianca run in the Juvenile Fillies turf on Friday, November 5th. I think she was a very good second in the Natalma Stakes at Woodbine last month with a touch of trouble, and has every chance to improve a little bit. He seems very bullish on her when we visited earlier this month. So I give that filly a chance in the Clement barn. Maybe more so or as much as Goofy.
What's your opinion of Appleby and the Godolphin, the veteran that won the Canadian International last month, yeah, Walton Street.
Yeah. Walton Street won very well. He's always been, this has really been his best year. He's kind of come alive a little bit. He had some okay races earlier in his career in England, but he never was really a Group 1 horse. Well, he won the Group 2 City of Gold Stakes at Maidan. He was in the Shima Classic, didn't perform as well as hoped. A couple of losses later, and then he came over and he won the Canadian in 4-5 favorite and control of the race almost throughout when he was second under Dottori, for the first three-quarters of a mile, and then came along in the stretch and just really pulled clear. If he duplicates that race, he'll be tough. He'll be very tough in that field, and that'll be interesting. They've got that nice three-year-old Y-Bar, who won the Jockey Club Derby at Saratoga last month. You know, he's growing up. He won the Great Voltiger Stakes at York in August. That is a nice pre-prep race, late season 3-year-olds race for the St. Ledger. So he's won his last two starts at 1.5 miles and two important races on both sides of the Atlantic. So you know, he's another horse that could easily finish in the first three. You get to the point where you start thinking, geez, this is like six or seven horses deep, and yes, it is. I mean, it is that strong of a group in the sense that there's no, once you get past Tarnawa, there's not going to be a lot of horses that would be considered, you know, throwouts. There's a lot of horses that can hit the board. And, you know, you consider the fact that 4 years ago, Godolphin won with Talismanic, who was like 16 to 1. Little Mike won it 9 years ago at 12 to 1. United was second. He's in the field. He's California's number one distance turf horse. He was second to Bricks and Mortar at 51 to 1 in 2019 at Santa Anita. The point of it is that even though you may think, well, he's a long shot, he doesn't have a chance, no, please go the other direction. If you believe you have a horse who seems a little bit, you know, overlooked in the betting, don't be afraid to make a bet on that horse in some capacity, because this race does produce surprises in regards to its top three and occasionally in its winner. So it's not a matter of everything over 7 to 1 needs to be thrown out. Please don't take that approach.
Want to ask you about another potential import. Did we hear anything about Seal Away after the Champions Day success?
At last I heard they were considering the Breeders' Cup, so that's going to be a circumstance where Monday, well, the pre-entries made on Monday and announced on Wednesday will determine that horse's participation. It had won in Paris in October of 2020. It was in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year, and it really hadn't had that great of a season until just his last few starts, and it seems to be improving. So, you know, whether they want to go one more time in America, or whether they consider, you know, one of the biggest problems the Breeders' Cup faces, and they'll acknowledge this, is the Hong Kong races in December
often
draw a lot of tough, good horses, too. And there's a little more of a gap between the Champions Stakes and the Hong Kong races in December. So that's something that has been mentioned, but we'll have to wait and see whether that horse comes over. And there's a possibility. There is a possibility that Seal Away will be part of the field.
I saw that you also, during the week, you had, as part of your AEs, potential participants. That's Sisfahan of Hank Gruse.
Yeah, and he was a nice horse overseas as well. I'd be surprised if he's in the first three. I'm not as keen on him as I am on several of the other horses.
Fair enough. Let's turn our attention, Steve Anderson with us, and offering the two categories that Steve historically has tracked, and the Juvenile Fillies Turf. And you mentioned Bobby Flay and the Pizza Bianca potential in here. Let me hold on. Juvenile Fillies, Juvenile Fillies Turf. There we go. But there's a number of interesting participants in here, and that also includes some Euros. How about your pecking order here?
Changing constantly. I mean, Wild Beauty's come out of the race. Godolphin's not bringing her over. She won the Natalma. We mentioned Pizza Bianca was second of the Natalma as a nice filly to follow. Hello You won the Group 2 Rockful Stakes at Newmarket in the last of September, and that's a 7-furlong race, but it's an uphill finish, so the belief is that that filly can get a mile, and I think she might be one who's a little bit overlooked in the field, although her chances will increase if Wild Beauty is not sent over. So there's that. But look at the domestic group. I mean, there's a nice group here. You've got California Angel and Diamond Wow, who were the 1-2 in the Jessamine Stakes a week ago Wednesday.
Yep.
They look nice. Turner Loose, who was third in that field, is still under consideration for the Juvenile Fillies Turf. She got out on the front, probably went too fast, and it was the first time she was beaten, but she was only beaten about a long neck. So she hung around, even though at a mile and a 60, even though I don't think the race unfolded in her favor. So those three look attractive. You know, who's going to be overlooked? How about Koala Princess, trained by Arnaud Delacour, who won the Ainsworth Stakes at 6 furlongs at Kentucky Downs on an undulating course? That suggests she could probably go farther than 3/4 of a mile. He held her out of the Jessamine and is working her up to the Breeders' Cup race. So she's going to be one to follow. Cairo Memories won at Santa Anita in the Surfer Girl Stakes very nicely. She didn't have the best speed figure, buyer speed figure in the field, but she's moving forward after and has won at a mile on the turf at Del Mar in a maiden turf race. So that was encouraging. And then, of course, there's Consumer Spending, trained by Chad Brown, who won the Salima galloping under the wire. So, you know, and he has an excellent strike rate in this race. It's really
for sure
one of the first big races he won on the Breeders' Cup stage back in the late 2000s when he was just getting his stable going. So, you know, he's got a team to look for. And Leah Grimaldi out of New York has Sail By that won the Miss Grillo. And then, of course, Brad Cox, who last year won it with Aunt Pearl, he trains Turner Loose, and he also has Bubble Rock, who won the Matron Stakes at 6 furlongs on turf, and she won well, too. Like, she wanted to go further. Jeez, how many is that, 8?
At least, and we haven't even talked about most of the Euros. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned Bubble Rock, because Christoph, on the boys' side, he's got the winner of the Futurity that he's going to stretch out as well to the mile.
So, you know, you get into the European side of the juvenile fillies turf, and we'll have to wait and see whether or not Aiden O'Brien says the race he's never won, by the way. Tenebrism won the Sheveley Park Stakes very well. So we'll see about that. Cachet is a really nice filly. She was second in the Rockfell Stakes behind Hello You that I mentioned, and then came back to run third in the Phillies Mile at Newmarket on the same uphill course a few weeks ago. Her credentials are very strong. Even though she hasn't won, she seems to be running in the right kind of races and running well in them despite losing. So those are just a couple of the ones from Europe, and from England, rather, and we'll have to wait and see sort of what the rest of the lineup looks like in a couple of days.
Interesting. And you know, one horse that I do see that, yeah, I assume you added Haughty after the maiden breaker, and this was a celebrated DQ victim at Belmont, and Chad shifted her out. We talked to Chad last week, and she came up and said that she was targeted to break her maiden, and then not only did she break her maiden, Steve. I mean, this is obviously a serious filly. Are they seriously considering entering her?
They are. And now we're getting into a circumstance where you wonder, you know, even though she only has maiden credentials and doesn't have any stakes credentials, how many fillies are going to be pre-entered, and will she be in the first 14? You know, it looks to be like a race that would probably have 18 or so pre-entries. And then because she doesn't have that stakes experience, and it's, then what will the panel
right,
think if
committee.
They have to rank them after they get to the 14?
This has been such a great, but that's
a list that you look at when it's published on Wednesday, and you think, okay, this horse is 4 deep on the also eligibles. It's not going to run. Hold on. We both know that everyone knows that, you know, over the course of the 5 days between the announcement of the pre-entries and the actual entries, a lot can change. Horses don't get shipped. Horses may go in different races. You know, someone may not be doing very well. And all of a sudden, horses that are down the list a little bit, no matter whether it's the juvenile turf sprint, which is going to have 43,000 pre-entries,
yeah.
You know, all of a sudden you think, well, geez, I wanted to bet on that horse, and he's 5 deep. Well, don't worry, just wait a little bit before you panic, because these things change quickly.
Steve, there's one horse on that list that I don't know anything about, and in fact, it's the first time I'm laying eyes on her name. Crazy Land, Clive Cox, and a Kodiak daughter, and Kodiak always raises my eyebrows.
Well, I think Crazy Land is a filly that if she does come over, she'll be one of the outsiders, and I'm not as keen on her as I am on some of the other horses that are in the lineup a little bit. You mentioned Clive Cox coming out of England. Just going to her form here real quick. And we'll wait and see whether or not that makes the trip. Just give me one more second here. I was looking over her form, and I'm going, well, she's certainly got a lot of qualifications, but she doesn't seem to really have the sort of lineup that you'd jump up and say, well, that this is the one. She's only won once in 5 starts. She was third in the Group 3 Dick Poole Stakes at Salisbury, and going 6 furlongs on Labor Day weekend. That was her last start. And that's the only group stakes they have at that track, and it's a good race. But in terms of who's in it this year, she didn't really necessarily have the form that's as good. Earlier in the year at Ascot, she was well down the track in the Queen Mary Stakes at the Royal Meeting, and then 6 weeks later it was 6th of 10 in a good little race called the Princess Margaret Keeneland Stakes there. And that's 6 furlongs. She's never run beyond 6 furlongs. But she has finished with a little bit of interest in a couple of her last races. So if she comes over, she's, you know, not out of the question for, you know, a start, but she's probably going to be about 30 to 1. And I might lean against her a little bit, to be honest with you. So we'll have to wait and see.
Couple of other Steve Anderson pieces and coverage. Wrote a nice piece about Godolphin's participation, and of course Jay with the news on Tuesday that Max Field was going to bypass the Breeders' Cup, but Godolphin has had a magical year internationally, Steve, and could add to the litany of success that they've enjoyed in 2 weeks.
They're champion owners in England for this season that's just ending now. The announcement was made last Saturday. To be honest with you, they're supposed to be this good. You know, when you have this much invested in bloodstock for decades and you have the operation that they have on a global basis, you know, Godolphin is supposed to be this good. You know, they're supposed to be in the championship contention every year in almost every category. And it's not just here in the United States and Europe. I mean, I see their names. Their Australian stable is bonkers good. It's just, it's remarkable how much depth they have worldwide. And so, yeah, this is another outstanding season for a stable that is, you know, kind of like the L.A. Dodgers. You spend $260 million on your payroll, you better be in the playoffs.
And they salvage. They continue to hang in against the Braves. Steve, finally, a couple of quick hits. The impressions of the Mean Queen over snap decision on Saturday and your thoughts on whether she can fare well at Cheltenham.
Well, that's the American Steeplechase Horse of the Year, so well done to her, because that was a heck of a stretch run in New Jersey last weekend. It was, you know, anyone's race to turn it into the stretch, and that was exciting because they were putting on a quite a duel. If they go back to Ireland, which they had raced in Ireland, Kerry Breon had raced in Ireland earlier this year, if they get a prep race or two, the Mare's Hurdle at Cheltenham in March is a possibility in terms of contention, but you can't go from the sidelines over the winter in the United States and expect to compete with those stables and be a factor. And no matter whether they go or not, she's really going to have to continue to improve in order to beat the big Irish barns that specialize in that race, notably Paddy Mullins. So Willie Mullins, rather. They have to do better than the preceding rare American runner at Cheltenham. You know, we have a couple of really nice horses in those two, but it's a very, very tough ask, and they know that. They know all about that. And, you know, it'd be fun to see her give it a try, but it'd be fun to see her give it a try with a 100% prepared horse. You can't go to Cheltenham short. That hill gets real mean, with a half mile to go. A lot of work to do to get up that mountain in contention when you've got those other horses in the.
And finally, Steve, before Nick Tamaro joins us, they're into carnival season in Australia, and I think the Cox Plate is this week?
Cox Plate is, depending on where you live in the country, it's either tonight or tomorrow morning. It is coming up at about 11:15 Pacific, and it's going to be very good race tonight. Zaki, who was a former Michael Stout horse in England, fought for $175,000, has been racing over in Australia this year with great success. He had a 5-race winning streak and recently with a 3rd-place run in the Caulfield Stakes to Probabil, a mare who's in the field for the Cox Plate. So we'll see what that goes. I think Zach will probably be favored. There's a field of 9. Very Elegant, another New Zealand mare, was the Australian Horse of the Year that was just announced a few weeks ago. But she's had a little bit of up-and-down form lately. But there's expectations that she'll be better than her last start, which was a 4th-place finish to a very good horse called Incentivize in the Turnbull Stakes at Flemington. And she should have no trouble with the 1¼, so it'd be fun to watch her again. But you just kind of think between her and Zaki, those will be the horses that will be the most impressive. And speaking of Godolphin, they have Animo, a 3-year-old, Southern Hemisphere 3-year-old, who is going to try the distance for the first time, having won the Grade 1 Caulfield Guineas on October 9th at a mile, finishing very well. So it indicated to him, and he'd be the good field, it's indicating that he might be okay at 1¼, gets a little bit of a weight break. So there's 3 that'll run. If you have to make a pick, I'd say let's go with Very Elegant, because 1¼ has been very good to her. She's 5-for-11 at that distance, and I mean, she's been running against some of the best horses in that country. So, one to consider.
Steve Anderson, everybody, and can't beat Steve's coverage. Interested in so many areas, whether it's the jumpers, whether it's the quarters, and obviously the work up and down the Southern California backstretches and training centers. Steve, look forward to seeing you probably next Sunday at Del Mar.
We're, It's going to be very quick. It'll be fun for it to get here finally. We can see how these lineups look very in just a few days.
Exactly. Pre-entries on Monday, pre-entry announcements on Wednesday. DRF Anderson, everybody, with an E. Steve Anderson, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll stay here. We'll take one break at the bottom of the hour. I think Nick Tamaro is standing by and ready to swing into action. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing? I'm here standing by and ready to swing into action.
And you're crystal clear and sharp sounding too, which I appreciate. And
I'm in the handy capsule, so I'm at home.
Handy capsule,
not traveling. So
nice.
Be me at my finest.
Well, I suppose we should plan ahead. What is the baby going to be for Halloween?
We're going to be the Flintstones.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
Yeah.
So she'll be Pebbly Poo. You'll be Fred.
Yes, we have Fred, Wilma, and Pebbles. We're ready to rock and roll. And of course, before Halloween, we have a second birthday to attend to, which is on Sunday. So yeah, very exciting time. My daughter's birthday is October 27th, so she will always be right in the vicinity of Halloween. And today we're going to a pumpkin patch, so it's just a regular fall day here in Houston. The high's about 86.
you pull out your fuzzy sweaters.
We've got Uggs and yeah, there's definitely hot chocolate and things like that. Yeah, it's really really exciting time.
You have to. There will be pictures, right? There'll be photographic evidence.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, good. All right, great. All you're missing, I guess, is Bam Bam. There's no Bam Bam and no.
Bam Bam in the mix yet. I've tried. I've really tried to get
a neighbor.
Or Dino. We need. We don't even.
Dino would be great.
So. Yeah, Dino. Actually, I was actually thinking of Dino. We've not considered Bam Bam as much, but.
Well, it
eventually.
Who was the better cartoon dog of ours growing up? Was it Dino or was it Astro on the Jetsons?
Well, I'm partial to Astro, but
I love Astro.
Yeah, he was. But all right, George, you know, tough to beat.
Yeah,
that, he was very good. I'm telling you, I mean, worlds collided for me when the Jetsons Meet the Flintstones movie came out. It was like. You want to talk about, you know, blending two tremendous elements of one's childhood. It's, it was great.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, I think I've read somewhere in Flintstones anthology that essentially was a cartoon, a cartoon version in the writer's minds, Hanna-Barbera, of the Honeymooners.
Really?
That was the. I'll tell you what. This week it came up. Who did I bring this up with? Somebody the other day. Who was it this week that brought up Ricky Ricardo? Did you see the advance trailer for the Lucy and Ricky movie?
I've read that it was coming. I've not seen it.
It dropped like on Wednesday, I think, and Nicole Kidman as Lucy, which is inspired, and Javier Bardem in a less threatening role than usual
that's a hell of a Ricky. Pair. Those are two very good actors.
Yeah, it should be terrific. It's called Becoming the Ricardos. It looks terrific in early December. I didn't know about it. I thought I did. I thought I had heard something, but I didn't realize that it was going to be that kind of a treatment.
Oh, I didn't realize. Yeah, Aaron Sorkin directed it too.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's got some cachet. It looks like. There we go. So we've covered a lot of ground today, including a survey of Kansas City dining, which you, if you were listening early, you might have caught. Let's dive into the pick five, the cross country, and it's a good one, obviously, Nick. The racing has been insanely good. I saw some people squawking that the prices haven't really dropped at Keeneland. They were a little. Some people were kind of looking for more prices to come around, but the field size and competition level has been great.
Yeah, I mean, the $3 all turf pick three on, I believe on Wednesday paid $3,000.
$3,000. I mean, don't want to talk about that.
There's been some Right. There's been some prices here and there, but no, the racing's been extremely competitive. I mean, look, today at Belmont, you've got an 11-horse, 3-year-old, 7-furlong turf stake race that looks very, very appealing. So, no, the racing's been very stout, and this is kind of a fun combination of races given the last week we dealt with the steeplechase, but this is a good mixture with, you know, a very, very nice stake race at Keeneland to go along with the two stake races at Belmont. So this should provide a pretty strong opportunity for anybody. I mean, there'll be an opportunity for some to find it underwhelming, but, you know, it's not necessarily.
No, and we should mention, came up a couple of times. I didn't bring it up with Andy, but I mentioned over $1,000 for that sequence. Discussed it with Seth, I think, and Joe Clancy. Over $1,000, Nick, and it was well within reach. That I thought that was a terrific return. The horse that I left as a B, which was a mistake, was Show Me the Honey. And so I had the three A's, the B, and then I split up that second stake at Far Hills. I had three A's, three C's, and I should have just made I should have used all four horses in the allowance in New York. I should have made all of those A's. It would have cost like an extra $30.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, of course, but. You know, regardless of what type of races comprise them, it's taking the opportunities when you can be a little narrower and giving yourself the chance to put a few more in when your opinion is a little bit less solid, I guess.
Well, let's see what we think here. And the sequence for those, in terms of the timing, it starts at 4:21 with the Noble Damsel at Belmont. Then there's the Allowance 8th at Keeneland, back to Belmont for the Hill Prince, and then the Raven Run and that other allowance that we talked about with Marty a little bit ago. And frankly, if you do the exercise to look at the 8th and the 10th at Keeneland, well, then you're going to want to look at the 5th as well, because that comprises your pick 5 on turf. So you've got that opportunity as part of this coverage.
Yeah, for sure. And that Noble Damsel, where it starts, you know, I think this is an opportunity where you can be a little bold, I would say, and single high opinion. And I know that some are going to think, well, what about Tammy here? You know, and really you have to understand Tammy here's last race. Two starts back, high opinion ran just as well, if not better than Tammy here. I know the pace was somewhat solid, but Tammy here had things her own way on the inner turf at Saratoga, and high opinion, you know, narrowly missed that in that race over the seemingly very fortunate Viadera, who seems to have a nose for the wire. But Tammy here's last race is as dressed up as a race could be. Right, it was a complete bog at Monmouth. She got the lead, nobody fired, and she ended up winning by this inflated margin that is really not indicative of how she stacks up with those horses anyway. So you're going to have to swallow a really short price on her, and I think she is no more likely a winner than high opinion by any means. So I would try and create a little value by being a little more bullish on high opinion, who I think is better at a mile anyway. And the fact that she took the step forward that she did last time out, I mean, what more can you say about Tony Dottro? It's been an incredible 2021, 16 wins for a guy who felt like he didn't even have 16 starters in the prior 3 years combined. So
very strange
to have him back. Yeah, he's always been a very, very solid trainer, and he's done a nice job with this filly. He's developed her rather gradually, and she's gotten to be very good, especially in the second half of this year. I think the couple of experiments sending her a mile and a quarter were, you know, designed at figuring out maybe if she did want a little bit more ground. She answered that very clearly, and so I think the mile is really right up her alley. There's just really nobody else in here who I think can win. Yeah, I suppose if you wanted to have backups, you could look at horses like In a Hurry,
yep,
Shifty She, and Love and Thunder, but they've all got to improve. You know, they've got to run better, I think, if High Opinion and Tammy here both show up.
I completely agree, and I was going to bring those three up, Shug on the Rail, Within a Hurry, and the resurgent Javier Castellano, and Shifty She. The Safi Joseph conundrum, and Love and Thunder, the other Chad. So there's your survey of the Damsel. Might as well do, let's do both New York, and then we'll do all three Keenelands right in a row.
Right. So then you have this, you know, tremendously difficult hill prints where I like slicked back. And I still like slicked back because I thought he ran extremely well in the Jockey Club Derby Invitational last time out. It's worth noting, I mean, and I don't want to give away too much of their work because it's so valuable and people should buy it. Snowhouse, who's running in the Carl Place today, absolutely shredded slicked back in their last workout. So you're going to get a line on slicked back based on the way Snowhouse runs today. It could, you know, just as easily be that slicked back is a horse that has really never trained on turf, and you know he might not be the same horse in the morning as he is in the afternoon. So I'm intrigued to see how he performs. Again, I thought that he ran every bit as well as Soldier Rising did in that Jockey Club Derby Invitational. I think the move to a mile and an eighth will also help him a great deal. His Virginia Derby was an underrated performance, and I think he figures to get a really good trip from the inside, sitting just off of it. The thing about this race to me that I feel most strongly about is that I don't want to use Public Sector. I don't really want Public Sector. I thought that he's been just an outrageously fortunate winner of his last few races. I don't think he's going to get better at a mile and an eighth. I think there's bound to be a time where he doesn't work out an absolutely ideal trip, and I'm going to bet against that happening this time around again. I thought that he benefited from Never Surprise being ridden a little bit unaggressively last time out. They really didn't allow Never Surprise to use that weapon that he possesses, which is a great deal of early speed, and he showed it early in his career, and for some reason he was ridden very conservatively in the Saranac, and I think that worked against him. I know he was coming back off a lengthy layoff. Sifting Sands can win. You know, there's no argument against him. I didn't think that he would duplicate the strong allowance performance two back in the Better Talk Now, and he did. He actually took a step forward. Worth noting that Wolfie's Dynaghost, who was in there, yes, came back and ran poorly on the dirt, but is sprinting in that Carl Place that I mentioned, which is a really good race late on today's card. So, you know, to me, I want to use a combination of the 2, 5, and 11. I like Soldier Rising just well enough. I didn't really have a great opinion on him last time, didn't particularly care for him. He ran fine. I think the mile and an eighth will be just fine for him. Obviously, he's got to work out a trip from the outside, but Rosario's going to take him back to make one run. This feels like his kind of trip. And the interesting price horse to me is War Bomber, who was claimed two back by Norman McKnight. This is an unbelievably strong dampside pedigree. It's all Coolmore horses, and this horse was taken for 25, came right back, and won a stake race. And, you know, I mean, with all due respect to his prior trainer, the current trainer likely noticed something that could be done differently and perhaps felt like this horse was underperforming, and boom, I mean, immediately brought him right back and got him at the right time, too. It would seem as he took a step forward that day, too. So I'm going to mainly focus on those three and see if we can get out of there without having to worry about the favorite.
It's a good, deep group. Soldier Rising, I suppose, is tactical enough under Rosario to work out a trip from out there?
I think so. I mean, he can probably just drag him back like he's known for doing and give him an opportunity to settle and make one run. Or, you know, he might want to ride him a little bit more and maybe get a bit of a mid-pack type trip. I think, you know, the good thing about Rosario is he reacts quickly. And, you know, I think when they break out of the gate, if he sees Kendrick really hustling, Never Surprised, then he can be certain that there's going to be pace. And in that case, he can take him back and let him settle. But Rosario seems to be the gold standard, especially of late. Mainly since I tweeted about how much he was struggling at Belmont, I turned things right around. That was, of course, because I'm a Joel Rosario fan, and it was kind of an anomaly at that point that he had done so well at Santa Anita and Kentucky Downs and Churchill and anywhere else he had ridden, and just unfortunately so poorly at Belmont, but we knew he would turn that around, and he did very quickly. So I think he'll find a way to work out a trip.
Let's take a look now at Keeneland and the three races. The 8th, 9th, and 10th are the 60% portion of this cross-country. And do you have any opinion in that Perryville, out of curiosity, first?
I'm very intrigued to see Pipeline. I think Pipeline has the potential to be a very, very nice horse. And, you know, he came out of that maiden special early at Saratoga that was won by Vindictive, and we all knew that was a good race and it was a fast race. Now, the interesting thing about his win last time out is that you got kind of a mixed bag of subsequent performances because Cody's Wish came back and won. He didn't run particularly fast, maybe not as fast as we thought he might have, but he did duplicate his speed figure from the time before. Waxman came back and ran last week and was awful. I don't know if it was the flop or what, but, I mean, he was under a heavy drive from the the three-quarter pole and ended up that his buyer speed figure dropped off 18 points as he never made an impression behind Realm of Law. So I don't want to hold that against Pipeline. I thought Pipeline was a very handy winner last time out anyway. And, I mean, I think he's got this field over a barrel. The morning line is a joke, but he's never going to be 4-1 in this race behind a couple of other horses. But races that happen in New York don't necessarily matter as much there. I mean, Soup and Sandwich, I think he's a sprinter when push comes to shove. I think this is the right trip for him, but I mean, I wouldn't use him for a nickel off the layoff. So I thought Pipeline for any kind of multi-race play was a very solid single.
Then let's get to the 8th, 9th, and 10th, the other three races that combine with the New York 8th and 9th, and the 8th at Keeneland, a conditional allowance. And it's got a little added intrigue. 12 horse field, and there's some very familiar stake types, you know, that have gotten a little hungry as the year has gone on.
Yeah, this is a really good race. I mean, you want to talk about contention running deep. First and foremost, it feels like there should be pace because you have Busy Channel on the outside, you have McGassity, Silver and Lie, Pirate's Punch. To a lesser extent, Big Agenda generally is somewhat forward, so Mr. Dumas can be forward as well. So it should be a very contested early pace, and I think that'll work in the favor of some of the horses that'll be running late. Just horses that I thought were interesting that are going to offer some value. Hierarchy has run well at Keeneland. I know the last time we saw him in October of last year, he didn't, but he's a horse who's going to benefit from that big pace. He's cutting back from a mile and a half to a mile and a sixteenth. I don't worry terribly much about that at all. I think you can count on him settling to make one run. I want to use him for sure. I was pretty intrigued by Argentello, who I think is going to be a good price as well. This is a horse who generally has run better fresh, and of course Connor Murphy has very good numbers with horses coming back off layoffs, but he's just been over his head his last two starts. I mean, I think it's as simple as chalking it up to that. He didn't belong in the Mint Million or the Keeneland Turf Mile, and now he's in a far more realistic spot from a class perspective in a race that should be run in a fashion that truly favors his style. So it all sort of makes sense to me with him, and I think he's going to be a good price as well. The Spectacular Gem is looking to kind of restart his career. This is a horse who was very good for a period of time. He's now a new gelding, which is interesting. And, you know, I don't necessarily know what hope they were holding on to that he was going to be a stallion, but that could be an occurrence that matters. And this is a horse that really has run some races against solid competition that make him very, very intriguing. You know, the problem, of course, is the pace scenario, and the pace scenario is not going to work in his favor, and that sort of worries me. I wanted to try and find a way to like Big Dreaming on the outside, but oof, with that rider and the way this race shapes up, I mean, you could see even he might have a hard time getting into position with the tactical speed that he has. So I worry a little bit there. Yeah, I was a little all over the place. I mean, I want to use primarily Argentello and an English B and Hierarchy as the main horses, and I'll definitely have a handful of backups because, again, it's a super competitive race and one where I think you need to, depending on if your opinions are, you know, able to be narrowed down elsewhere, you really have to be, I think, a little bit liberal.
No interest in Big Agenda at all.
I like him well enough. I mean, I would definitely use him as a backup. I know he ran very well at Kentucky Downs last time. He also ran at a period of time where it was getting to be better to be towards the inside. So it was a solid effort. I just wondered if second off the layoff he would be quite as effective. I mean, I think he's a horse that you pretty much have to use. I wanted horses that were going to be deeper closing types. He comes from just off of it. But, yeah, he seems pretty obvious and one that you wouldn't want to be beaten by.
Gets us to the Raven Run, and Obligatory got some tongues wagging about bypassing the Breeders' Cup for this spot and ends up in a fairly advantageous wide berth to survey everything going on to the inside. Obligatory is going to be a pretty, I imagine, a short enough price in here.
Yeah, she should be. What is she, 3-1 on the morning line? Yeah,
2-1.
I think that seems fair. She's in many ways the horse to beat. I think she became kind of a clever cutback type coming out of that cotillion, and It would have been difficult for her to be competitive, I think, in the Breeders' Cup, even with a relatively modest field coming together. It ultimately, we'll see whether it was something they should have tried. She's definitely better sprinting, and I expect her to improve. I think you can give her a reasonable excuse for the test. Two back, there was just no pace in front of her at all, and she got out of the gate very poorly. Looks to be coming into this race very well. I will say that I do think her stablemate, the other Bill Mott trainee, Caramel Swirl, is just as interesting, and I know people are going to really dismiss her readily because of the Charlestown Oaks performance. That was a huge inside bias. So, I mean, anybody that watched more than a race or two at Charlestown that night realized that if you weren't on the rail, you were in very, very big trouble, and she was never anywhere near the rail. So you can draw a line through that race. She's in a little bit of a good race, bad race pattern. Worth noting, though, that her best race to date by far, not came at Saratoga two starts back, but her second best race came at Keeneland in April, where she won by 10 and right, yep. And then went into the eight bells as one of the choices in that race that, of course, ultimately was won by Obligatory. So, you know, I'm going to use the two Motts. Super Sensational appeals to me a little bit more than Scylla. I thought Super Sensational did a little bit more running last time out. I don't know if the 7 furlongs is a little bit of a mitigating circumstance for her. The only speed horse that I want to find a way to use is Joy's Rocket. And my thought on that, and again, I'm not going to use her as more than a backup, but my thought on that is that they needed to get a race into her last time, and her efforts last year, late last year, were solid enough if she can take a step forward off of those. I wonder if she'll be ridden aggressively enough to really take advantage of being drawn inside, but nonetheless, I mean, she's a horse that I can make a case for that's going to be somewhat forwardly placed. And then, you know, that Nightcap is a race where I pretty much focused on the horses in the middle of the pack. I thought the 4, 5, and 6 were the ones that I wanted to use prominently, and I didn't really have a whole, with a little bit of Pine Knoll as well. So 4, 5, 6, 10. Ginsburg, I thought, ran well enough in the Bruce D. That, of course, was a race that was grade one in name only, but he ran well stepping up in competition. This horse, Santine, obviously is a very, very good pedigree, and I just made up the pronunciation on that name. I did not listen to the call of his debut, but Sentiero Italia, many people will remember, was a grade one winner in 2015, and actually was, I think she was a single-digit price in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. But, it's, of course, Brendan Walsh debuted this horse at Indiana. So, I mean, he obviously didn't have aspirations of her winning first time out, but she did, and he did, rather, and now has the opportunity to step up in class right away because I guess Walsh has realized this horse might actually be pretty good. So that one, along with Healing, who I thought has now clearly improved since getting into Mike Maker's care and ran a race last time out of Kentucky Downs that really shows that I think he'll be ready to improve second off the layoff. Pine Knoll comes out of a race that otherwise completely collapsed. He was the only one who was there the whole way, and he figures to be in a good spot just off the pace.
Pine Knoll, a noted collegiate prep academy around Boca Raton. I would be
really that's a departure from the John Ed Anthony standard names, which are usually
that's a good point. That's a good point. And then maybe there's a pine. Let's see if there's a Pine Knoll in actually, you know what? I'm thinking of it's not Pine Knoll. It's Pine, maybe Pine Crest. Who's in South Florida that can if my cousin Debbie is listening, because I think her, that's what made me think. Yeah, Pine Crest actually is what I'm thinking of, not Pine Knoll. Yes. There you go. Pine Crest, south of
there
Deerfield
it is.
Beach.
Pine Knoll is a city, is an area around Little Rock.
There it is. There's the John Ed, the classic loblolly name. Did you look at the fifth yet?
I did not have a chance to really dig into it. I looked at it just kind of glancing over, thinking about that all-turf pick three. And yeah, I didn't really have anybody that stood out without doing a little bit more work. War Machine, obviously, coming back off the short layoff, I thought ran credibly last time out of Del Mar and his new gelding. Caveat Emptor is going to be a huge favorite. And, you know, you wonder, this horse obviously is bred to get better with experience and distance. So you wonder how much you could potentially lean on him. And it didn't look like it was incredibly contentious beyond those, at least at first glance.
Well, the 5th, the 8th, and the 10th. If you're doing the 8th, 9th, 10th for the cross-country, you might as well add in the 5th and attack the $3 pick 3 as well. And since Nick gave you a single in the in the Perryville. Well, now you've got to pick four play that you're set for as well, and then all you have to do is handicap the sixth at Keeneland tomorrow, and you've got to pick five play. So all the work is, we do the work so you don't have to.
Pretty much. That's what that's why you asked me to come aboard.
Exactly. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam 1215 coming soon as Fred Flintstone, and this will be epic. And you really don't even have to do the black marks on the cheeks the way Fred Flintstone people do when they go out as Fred.
No. I'm very well equipped. It's and my costume was very, very well handled by my wife. It's going to be
unbelievable. This is going to be
very exciting.
Great. Oh, you're excited. I'm beside myself. This is huge.
I can tell.
No, it's going to be great. I mean, we're headed to Rochester to see the baby. And I'll be gone. I never get to see any Halloweens anymore, except, you know, whatever town, whether we're in Kentucky or in California. Because I love it. I've always loved it. Tina's threatening to not even to turn the lights out, not even offer anything, which I'm shocked at. That got me a. I can't do that. I mean, this town. This town is a big. We have a Halloween parade in Greenwich.
Oh yeah, no, that's not going to work. In fact, I mean, we're new to the development here, and are excited about trick or treaters and things like that because we didn't have that experience in the past. So no, it's got to be well received.
Nick Tavro, everybody. Nick, appreciate it. And Nick, of course, is Belmont coverage daily at In the Money, and we'll. Start to be zeroed in on Breeders' Cup next week.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. Have a good
weekend. Nick. You too. Nick Tamaro, folks. Let's take a break. Our only one of the morning. Coming back, Ed DeRosa. Ed with a major career move announcement this week, if you didn't catch up to it. It's going to wind down his career at Twinspire/Brisnet, and go to Horse Racing Nation. Kind of a return to his, it seems. I'd let him talk about it, but to his Thoroughbred Times kind of origin, maybe. We'll see. We'll see what he's got planned. We'll also talk about the Brisnet Breeders' Cup package, which dropped Wednesday or yesterday. I saw the announcement, and I went to go open it, and it wasn't ready yet. So I think it's ready now, though. And so we'll get they had PPs out. I got them sitting right here. So we'll get a survey of the package. They cover it every which way you could possibly imagine. International, Kelly Riley, and terrific package. Ed DeRosa next, then Dave Grenig. We'll go to New York. We'll get Dave's divisions, the Juvenile and the Filly and Mare Turf. We still have to get to, who do we have to get? We have to get to Nicole Russo yet, right? Got to get to Nicole. And who am I missing? We've had Jay, of course, in the last couple of weeks, and Marty. Mike Welch. Got to get to Mike Welch for the sprint and what does he do? The Juvenile Turf Sprint, I think. Or is that Nicole? Anyway, we'll get to everybody back after this second half. Twin Spires weekend preview at the races continues here on Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more